We're going to open the Senate Education Committee. Today is March 21st, 2017. And we're going to start off with a couple public hearings. So we'll open them both at the same time. So we're going to open a public hearing on SJR 18 and 20. And with that, we're going to invite our good administrator here to go through the bills. And Senator Farioli can come to the desk.
Chair Roland, members of the committee, Senate Joint Resolution 18 amends the Constitution. It requires the Legislative Assembly to pass a bill appropriating funds for the state's K-12 education system by the 65th day of the regular legislative session in odd-numbered years. It withholds compensation from all legislators beginning on the 66th day of the regular legislative session in odd-numbered years if the K-12 appropriation bill has not been passed by the 65th day. It requires the amendment to be submitted for a popular vote at the next regular general election. Senate Joint Resolution 20 amends the Constitution. It requires the Legislative Assembly to pass a bill appropriating funds for the state's K-12 education system before passing appropriations bills for any other agency in odd-numbered years. It requires the Legislative Assembly to consider the governor's written objections to an appropriation bill for the state's K-12 system before considering appropriations bills for any other state agency. It voids appropriations bills passed in violation of the provisions of this bill. It requires the amendment to be submitted for a popular vote at the next regular general election.
So there we go. So,
Mr. Chair, thank you so much for hearing these two fine proposals. State Senator Ted Farioli, District 30. Mr. Chair, I'll talk first on 18 and then on 20, if you prefer.
Be great.
This bill is a referral to Oregon citizens to allow them to partner with the state legislature and setting priorities for what people believe, I think, is one of the most important functions of the legislature, and that, of course, is K-12 education funding. SJR 13 would refer the question to Oregon citizens that would amend the Constitution to require the Legislative Assembly at our regular session, held in odd number of years, to pass the K-12 budget before passing any other bill that appropriates funds for any other state agency. And it specifies that if another agency had an appropriation that was placed ahead of the K-12 education budget, that appropriation would be void. Mr. Chair, that is a simple restatement of the excellent analysis that Lisa just put on the record. I'll just follow that with testimony on SJR 20, if it pleased the court.
That would be great.
Thank you. This is a similar proposal that would require the Legislative Assembly to pass the K-12 budget by the 65th day of the regular session held in that odd-numbered year. And this is the part I like best. Or it would prohibit compensation to legislators if that bill is not passed by the 65th day. So, Mr. Chair, we think that that would certainly get the attention of legislators if they knew that they would be coming into a legislative session where they had to not only fund education first by the 65th day, but also failure to do so would result in their compensation, their lavish compensation with benefits be withheld from them until they have fulfilled their duty to fund K-12 education. Any questions, Mr. Chair, or panel?
You mean my per diem?
Yes.
I don't think it's per diem, the way it was read.
No, it's actually salary. It's all compensation.
Only salary. All compensation.
Anything of value.
Oh, okay. So I was trying to. Very good. Any questions from this distinguished committee? I'm not seeing any.
Mr. Chair, stunned silence is a response I frequently encounter in this building. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
No, thank you. And I do, so we have nobody else that wants to speak, apparently, as well.
Not surprising. We've been working on the 65th day.
For more than a few years.
I think it's almost a decade now we've been suggesting. Look, I think the first person who suggested the 65th day was Jason Atkinson, mm-hmm. Senator Atkinson.
Yep.
Said, look, we should take this up.
And I think when we had our co-speaker opportunity, we did it by the 65th day.
Yeah, on the House side.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, that's true.
Yes. So I would just say you have an excellent history on
there
this.
There you
bill,
go.
Mr. Chair.
We were close last year, weren't we?
Yes, sir.
Okay. I was just going to say. I mean, all the budgets have to get done.
Yes.
Right? And this is the one that's the biggest. So, and if you want more, you better be careful with the other budgets you pass, because you can always come back at the end of the session and put a little bit more in.
Right. And there is a practical consideration as well. Administrators, school district administrators, literally cannot move forward unless they know what the big number is. The building actually is full of folks who can parse the question and give them down to the gnat's eyelash the value of the appropriations that we make on a ADMW basis or on a school district basis. So that number is well known to all school district administrators. The difficulty is for us to settle on the big number. If we do that, then they can move forward. And as the chairman observes, if additional revenues become available or other alternatives present themselves, we can revisit the question.
Yes, Senator Hess.
Thanks. I will engage, because I don't want you to come down here and think that nobody's... But what you just said to me is a compelling reason for doing this, is for planning. Speaking of practical, though, I think what's been driving it toward the end of session historically has been that all-important May forecasts. You don't really know how much money you have to play with on the biggest budget that we pass. So if you say to your administrators, okay, we're going to do this by the 65th day, and we do it, and then the May forecast comes in and says, oh, we have, you know, we took a $300 million hit. We're going to have to back out some of that money. Now you've left them in more of a lurch. Or if they know that the May forecast is coming in and there may be money to add in, they still don't know how much to hire. So, you know, you kind of have that issue. You're not really giving certainty to the administrator. This is just my mind's going back and forth, and I could argue both sides of this bill. I really could.
Mr. Chair, if I might respond.
Please.
I don't think there's anybody on the dais that can't argue both sides or the middle of any of these questions. We get adept at that. And there is validity in your argument. The only thing I would tell you, just to play the devil's advocate for a second, if we ended up appropriating a dollar amount that we agreed to, because you'd have to have both chambers and probably bipartisan support for that, and that number came in low, I would think that would be a very strong argument for additional revenue. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
And I, the only thing I would say is I have lived in this situation more than a few times, and I will tell you that from my perspective, and if people ask me back in the district, they'll say, what should I plan for? And I'll say, have you seen the governor's budget? And they say, yes. And I say, have you seen the co-chair's budget? They said, yes. I said, so pick the lowest one and plan as much as you can, because I can't guarantee you that you'll get any more than that.
Right.
And so most of them do. And I said, and if we get more money, you'll be happy and you'll be so excited, because you've already identified the things you had to cut, so you'll be able to put some of it back. So, but anyway, so for me, the fact is we have to get out every year. And this is the budget that causes most concern in this building. So getting it done early so we can have a real conversation about the others is probably not a bad idea. So I go back and I can argue both ways. I'm getting more and more to the fact that I don't need special sessions and I don't need longer sessions. If this would cut that down a little bit, it would probably be good for all of us. So I'm looking at it very seriously. I believe it has another stop before it gets out of here, however.
It would definitely.
Anyway, either one of them.
So. Yes. We'll have it. And a final arbiter, which would be the citizens of the state of Oregon.
Yeah.
But, Mr. Chair, just to point out what may be obvious to everybody, you know, this is, in fact, the thing that most citizens prioritize as the top issue. And there's a growing cynicism among voters who believe that this is an issue that just gets taken hostage. And, you know, in a real way, dispatching this issue within that 65-day window, I think helps reestablish a connection between voters and legislators. We do take this seriously. Those kids are not being held hostage, and we're going to put as much money as we can possibly wrestle into that budget. We also have another parameter, and that's the quality education model. We have never been able to fully fund the quality education model, and I don't doubt that we will not fund it to that level again this year. But all of the folks that are depending on us to act are waiting. And that waiting creates a lot of dynamic tension in the building, and I think this is one way to alleviate that.
Okay. Any other questions, thoughts?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Members of the committee, have a wonderful day.
Thanks. You as well. So after that thrilling conversation up here, is there anybody else that now feels like they need to say something? I'm not finding anybody. Okay. So come on up and address the group and give us your name and what you do for a living, since I know, but maybe not everybody does.
My name is Robert Hassan. I'm a superintendent in Lebanon Community School District. And Senator Chair Roblin and Senators, I just want to say that this is a great idea for the people of Oregon, because, you know, we're wrestling right now with building a budget. We have bargaining coming up. We have multiple moving pieces. And, you know, to think that we may know by the end of June, we hope, it makes for unstable funding cycles year after year, feast or famine mode, and it's just not good for the stability that we need for our kids. So having this as a priority to let the people decide whether or not we want to have the education budget built first, done first, and then that will help make our work more effective and efficient. Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions? We could ask about Promise because he likes it. I'll wait. I'll hold on.
That's a Jeff Group standard.
That's right. So with that, we're going to close the public hearing on SJR 18 and 20, and we will open a public hearing on Senate Bill
747 first.
Oh, there it is. The sign's there. Senate Bill 747. I guess we're trying to make sure that Senator Knope's son gets to spend as much time as he can in our committee. So we're going to go with Senate Bill 747. Open that hearing. So we'll have a summary of the bill.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 747 creates student loan insurance in the insurance code. It defines student loan insurance as insurance against financial loss by reason of non-payment. It directs the Department of Consumer and Business Services to establish rules relating to authorization to transact student loan insurance. It establishes program requirements and becomes operative January 1st, 2018.
So with that, welcome to the Senate Education Committee. And please identify yourself.
Thank you for having me, Chair Roblin and members of the committee. My name is Daniel Knope from Bend. I am from Senator Tim Knope's office. I'm here to represent Tom Eichhorst of Bend, who is the originator of the idea and intent behind this bill. He regrets that he couldn't be here in person, but he asked for the office of Senator Knope to come here and speak on his behalf. We obliged him because, as public servants, not just the elected officials, but also the staff, one of our primary duties is to serve our constituents. However, I'm not able to offer as much insight into the intent and reasons behind the bill as he would have had he been here to present his own testimony. I will now proceed to read what he has sent over to me. Chair Roblin, to the Senate Committee on Education, the purpose of this to be proposed piece of legislation is to help in a small way to secure for future students seeking college financial support from institutions, and also for the protection of those financial institutions' resources and helping to maintain continued assistance financially for students in order to continue in their education goals. This bill should be written up in the simplest language so as to not confuse anyone as to its intent and or purpose, and to use legal terminology only when a student purchases a loan for a college or university that a student have the option of purchasing along with said loan an insurance policy that would back up the amount of the loan so as to protect any kind of default from happening should said student be unable to pay the loan back. There would have to be stipulations attached stating that every effort would have to be made to pay to pay said loan back to the lending institution from which loan was made, and that there would be some kind of benefit paid back to the student if said loan was paid back in full. This idea is only to be implemented should, for economic reasons, a student were unable to pay the loan back, in which the insurance policy would kick in to pay for the loan. The insurance amount would vary depending upon the amount of the loan. Thank you.
Any questions for young Mr. Knope? I guess all I would say is I appreciate it. I hope you had a good time. I haven't seen you doing a lot of testifying before. I
haven't, yeah. It's so, been a fun experience.
Okay, that's a good thing. And I feel very strongly that representing our different people in our district is an important aspect. So thank you for being here. So is there anyone else that wants to talk to this bill? Seeing no one, we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 747. So with that, we are going to, Mr. Knope is not here yet, right?
Senator Knope.
So we're going to open a work session on two bills, Senate Bill 274 first. So we'll hear a short explanation.
I thought he was going to carry that away over.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Senate Bill 274 requires post-secondary educational institutions that provide housing to provide information on vaccine-preventable diseases known to occur in individuals between the ages of 16 and 21 years old. It establishes program requirements. It makes technical changes to state law governing immunization requirements for college students. The Dash 2 amendment adds a definition of post-secondary institution of higher education. It eliminates references to specific diseases. It eliminates the requirement that students acknowledge receipt of information. It adds a requirement that institutions inform students about vaccines categorized as A or B, either by the Federal Advisory Committee on Immunization Practices or the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. The amendment specifies that the bill does not create a private right of action against a post-secondary educational institution.
So, any discussion. I'll hear a motion. Do you want to make the motion, or do you want to? I know you're not in favor of the bill.
Right. I can make the motion for discussion purposes. Chair, I make a motion that Senate Bill 274. I first amend it. I'd like to amend 274 by the dash. I move to adopt the Dash 2 amendments to. Dated 2/22, it looks like, on this piece of paper, to the bill 274.
Senator Lithicum moves to amend Senate Bill 274 with the Dash 2 amendments that were dated 2/22/17. Is there any discussion about the amendments? I think they. From my perspective, they lower the kind of the requirements that are that the schools have to do, and make it fairly clear that what we're trying to do here is give information to everybody coming to a higher education institution that there are certain diseases that happen at those schools and that they should consider in vaccinations. It doesn't require any vaccinations, doesn't do it like that stuff, but it lets people know ahead of time that there are certain things, meningitis being the one that's been the most rampant in our state the last few years. So, is there any other discussion? Any opposition to the amendment? Okay. So pass. Senator Lithicum, do you want to?
I'll make a motion, Chair Roblin, for Senate Bill 274 as amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. However, I am opposed.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Lithicum moves Senate Bill 474 as amended to the floor. 274. Thanks. As amended to the floor with a do pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Thank you, Senator Cruz.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm really not sure this solves any problems. And, I mean, meningitis is what was put out there as the poster child, but when that happened, it was all over the media, so everybody knew about it. So I'm not sure this would have actually solved any problems, but for the sake of efficiency of the committee, I will support the bill as of this point.
Okay. Thanks, Senator Cruz. And I will say that I am very thankful personally that I had a doctor in with my daughter when she went off to college that said, did you know this could be a really problem? She's going out of state and that kind of stuff. And he said, I would recommend that she get vaccinated. She did. There was an outbreak at the school she was at. We felt much better as parents that she'd had the opportunity to have that conversation and decide on her own whether she wanted to have a vaccination or not before she left. So I hope that we don't know necessarily where our kids are going to go. Most of them are 18. They need to make decisions for themselves about their own health. And I think that if the school will send that out ahead of time, it can be helpful. They still get to make the decision, and I encourage each and every one to make that decision on their own. So with that, any further discussion on vaccinations? Is there any opposition? Senator Lithgow is opposed, and Senator Gelser is excused. With that, bill passes. I will carry. Next, we'll close the work session on Senate Bill 274, open a work session on Senate Bill 420. So, remind us of the bill.
Chair Roblin.
And the amendment. Well, the amendment, because that's really the bill.
Mm-hmm. Chair Roblin, members of the committee. The Dash 1 amendment replaces the measure. It directs the Higher Education Coordinating Commission to establish rules for reimbursing resident students for tuition spent on upper division mathematics courses at public universities under certain circumstances. It requires reimbursements to be made by public universities by direct payment or by credit against the student's tuition for a succeeding term of enrollment. The amendment establishes the task force on creating incentives for mathematics teaching in Oregon and specifies the task force's membership. It requires the task force to submit a report to an interim legislative committee by September 15, 2018. It repeals the task force on December 31, 2018. The amendment takes effect 90 days after sine die.
Okay.
Chair Roblin, I move to adopt the Dash 1 amendment dated 224 to Senate Bill 420.
Senator Lithgow moves the amendment, dash ones, to Senate Bill 420. Those amendments were dated 2/24/17. Is there any discussion about the amendments? Is there any opposition to the amendment being added? Seeing none, so it passes. Senator Lithgow.
Chair Roblin, I move Senate Bill 420 to the floor with a due pass recommendation and as amended, and that the bill be referred to the Joint Committee of Ways and Means by prior reference.
Senator Lithgow moves Senate Bill 420 as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation and that it be sent to Ways and Means by prior reference. Is there any conversation about that? Yes, Senator Cruz.
Thank you, Ms. Chair. I'm supporting this. The goal here is absolutely wonderful. I truly appreciate that. But I still have an issue with siloing funding into the system. In a perfect world for me, we give all the money to the schools and let them figure out the best way to do it. I understand that. But we don't have a perfect world. So is this a need? It absolutely is. I'm just, in this budget situation, I'm just not sure how we spread the money. But the goal is a laudable goal, and I do support the intent.
So any other, yes, Senator?
I also support the intent. However, I don't think the HEC is the appropriate place to put this responsibility, and so I am opposed to it as it sits.
Okay. Any further discussion? Seeing none, any opposition? We've already heard some. So Senator, make sure to note that Senator Lithgow is a no and that Senator Gelser is excused. And with that, Senate Bill 420 is passed and on its way to Ways and Means. With that, we'll close our Senate Bill 420 hearing, and we'll open a public hearing on Senate Bill 803. And I'll give my gavel to Senator Lithicum since I'm going down to present. And you can give a short explanation. And Senator Cano, come on.
Vice Chair Lithicum, members of the committee. Senate Bill 803 establishes a grant program beginning in 2017-18 to school districts for support service programs, education innovation programs, and education intervention programs. It establishes program requirements. It directs the State Board of Education to establish by rule a list of strategic investments. The bill requires school districts receiving grants to establish separate accounts for grant funds and use those funds only for the purposes specified in their grant applications. The bill authorizes the Oregon Department of Education to spend up to $300 million from the state school fund each biennium for these grants. It requires a minimum of $100,000 each biennium to be distributed to school districts that have a weighted average daily membership of fewer than 250 students. The bill declares an emergency effective July 1st, 2017.
Okay. Okay. So we've had this bill. Oh, that's right. I know you have the gavel, so we'll let you, you know, whenever you need to.
I was getting ready to throw it, and then I decided, I thought, which of you would like to go first? Senator Roblin, would you like to go first?
Thank you very much, Senator Lithicum. For the record, State Senator Arne Roblin from District 5. For the last couple of sessions, Senator Canope and I have introduced this bill for one purpose. We really have not, last session, a little different over the 2 years ago, we actually had enough resources to put some money back into education that allowed schools, districts to start rebuilding after what we had been doing for the years before. But one of the dilemmas that superintendents find themselves in regularly is that we have a lot of requirements with some money, and they know that if they spend the money the way they have it, they are not going to be as successful as they could be with any one of those programs. They'll spread it over a lot of them. So many superintendents have been making the decision that they can't really do some of the things that we're requiring when we don't have enough money to do it, and therefore they do the best they can with what they have. And that continues to be the case today. And we just got a new Senate, a new bill that said we're going to put some money into these programs to get kids to graduate. The last ballot measure 82, that's going to do all those things, which also costs a lot of money. And it's part of it is the frustration that I think voters and others have had for years about how schools don't get to do are not doing the things that they think are really important. And so somebody came up with a list of things that they thought were really important, and they were willing to vote for it, but not the resources to go with it. And so given our circumstances that we're in, what this bill really is trying to do is say, let's figure out what we can do, spend as much as we can to get the basics of our education done, and then take $300 million and say to those districts, we know you can't do all the things you want to do well, but you know your community better than most of us know it, and you know the things that would be really important for your kids and the things you could be most successful with if you had the resources. So we're going to let you make a list of those things you're going to provide for your kids based on getting your allocation of that $300 million to your school. And we'd like you to do it the way you want to do it with the money you have. And tell us what you're going to do ahead of time, which one of the things you want to focus on, and keep track of how it works so that we can get some general information from my perspective about if we have the correct funding for these different programs, how did they perform, as opposed to do all of them with less resources. And we know how that's going to perform. It doesn't work. You get some kids to take advantage of it and do it, but you don't get the overall success that I believe some of these programs would have had they had the appropriate funding. And so from my perspective, it's one way to start doing what Senator Cruz said just a few minutes ago, give the money to the schools and let them do the work. It's at least saying, we're going to give you some money which you can make priorities in your district and then do the work. So I encourage you to think about this bill, and I would love to see it go on down to Ways and Means. I know that finding $300 million is not a really easy task, but the conversation, from my perspective, for us to have about how we get really great programs funded at the sources they need to be funded at, to see did they end up with the expectations we had, Did they get kids engaged? Did they get more of them to graduate? Whatever the program, did they mentor teachers so they had better teachers in every classroom? Whatever those programs are that they have, let them help make us a decision and help our state get a better education system for all kids. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you, Senator Cano.
Thank you, Chair Linthicum and members of the committee. I'm here in support of Senate Bill 803, and I'd like to thank my my chief co-sponsor and partner on this bill, Senator Roblin, for helping bring it forward this session. So,
excuse me, would you state your full name for the record?
Yes, so it's Timothy William Canope, born in Portland, Oregon.
State, we don't hold that against
state,
you.
I know. State Senator, District 27. They left me. I didn't leave. Anywho, thank you for the reminder of what I need to technically do to testify here today. So, ongoing, this bill amends the state school fund and makes education innovation a permanent part of school funding, adding $300 million a biennium straight to districts and programs for kids. It's simple in that districts can choose from a menu of innovations based upon local needs. So, for freedom-loving people everywhere, this bill is for you. Accountability, funds are tracked on a special district revenue page using current budgeting process, so no more. You don't have to create another report in order to, if this bill were to pass. It's equitable in that small districts get a minimum, so a small district's is 250 ADMW or under would get $100,000 per biennium, with the rest distributed on an ADMW basis to all other districts. And I think it's fair and efficient. Dollars go directly to districts to support ongoing innovation. And so if this bill were to pass on an annual basis, so the rough estimates are that Roseburg would get $1.5 million, Beaverton would get $10.1 million, Corvallis would get 1.6, Albany 2.3, Klamath County District 1.6 million, Klamath City District 800,000, and Coos would get 770,000, and Lincoln would get 1.4 million. So that's on an annual basis, and those aren't all new dollars, but they are flexible dollars, which I think is also a key. Some of those may be new dollars. It's obviously depends on what level we fund education here in the building. But I think it's important that if you look at the list of innovations, we obviously have CTE on there. We have STEM, things to improve graduation rates. But you know what? It might be that the district wants to do behavioral specialists, life skills, or career planning. And for those of us who believe in local control, this is local control with sideboards. And I would encourage your support of Senate Bill 803.
Thank you for the testimony. Are there any questions?
Yeah.
Senator Cruz?
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chair. I like your list. It's incredibly comprehensive. I do have a concern because you're leaving to a degree the list to the State Board of Education to make rules around, and that bothers me. I think the flexibility needs to be there, that these are the things that they can do, and let them come forward with what they want to do with it without having a whole bunch more rules established by the State Board. Just a concern. And Mr. Vice Chair, the other concern I have is the minimum of 100,000 to districts with populations below 250. There's a couple districts in the state that I think like have 6 or 8 students. That's a heck of a lot of money for a district that size. So I think you may need to take a look at that lower end and kind of make some graduations in there. Just a thought.
The hard part is it's difficult to do anything with less than $100,000. I'm just saying, if they're going to do any kind of innovation, we've done stuff for those very small schools to give them more money because of that same issue. But we do need to look and see if there's any of that small. So
Mr. Vice Chair, I understand the small school allotment we do in most cases is absolutely essential because you can't do much, but I'm just thinking, I think they're Imbler in a couple places like that. Okay, just putting it on the radar screen.
Thank you.
Any other questions? I'll make an observation. There's almost 20 school districts with 20 or fewer, and that $100,000 minimum, lands in that bucket. There are nearly 60 that land in the 250 or less category, and those graduations from 20, to 50 to 100 to 250, those graduations in there maybe ought to be reviewed, as Senator Cruz was implying. It'll be interesting to see what you can work up. Are there any other individuals who would like to testify on this bill, either pro or con?
Just Senator Knoll could do the con too if we really wanted to.
If you have no further comments, you're free to go. Thank you.
Thank you.
And then we'll. I have a list here: Dr. Robert Hess and Mark Thielman and Morgan Allen are welcome to come to the.
We'll leave you in charge.
Okay, just for a couple minutes. We'll just start here and move from left to right.
So my name is Robert Hess, and I'm superintendent of Lebanon Community School District, and Senator Lithium.
Lithicum.
Sorry.
Close enough.
Okay. And the members of the committee, I just want to say that this bill is I tracked this bill a couple of years ago and became a big fan of it, because one of the things that we struggle with in education is being able to have innovative funds that can move things forward district by district. We have 197 districts, small and large, and every district, Oregon is very diverse in its districts in terms of what their needs are. And a fund like this that we can count on year after year can help us innovate and target programs and build and get better outcomes based on the struggles that each district is facing. So, for instance, in my district, we've had, I'm year eight as superintendent, which is like I'm a survivor. After 8 years, that's something. And we've been able to move forward graduation rates. We've achieved equal outcomes in our graduation rates, something very few districts have been able to do. And we've done it because we've invested in programs like AVID. We've invested in CTE. We've invested in things that Measure 98, for example, says people should be doing. And then then you get laws passed that say you need that those things that you currently did, you may have different needs now, but you can't spend it on mental health, or you can't spend it on music, which is something that we need to start building into back in our district. It presents problems in terms of really pursuing innovations and going after them. So this is a bill that I think can provide flexibility, ongoing support. I like the fact that it has a separate tracking page so that people can look at what's been done and what outcomes you've achieved through it, and the accountability pieces plus the flexibility, I think, is very, very important for districts. So I urge your support to move it on to Ways and Means, and that this can be a way to increase spending into the K-12 fund and to give districts the flexibility they need to achieve their goals and outcomes.
Thank you, Chair Rilbin, members of the committee. Morgan Allen here on behalf of COSA. A lot of good discussion today about school funding. And one of the things that hasn't been discussed, and I feel compelled to put on the record before I talk about the bill, is And we've talked to our superintendents about this from an organizational perspective, and I think you'll hear this from the other education groups as well. We believe that the legislature needs to appropriate at least $8.4 billion to the state school fund to avoid drastic cuts across the state. And that doesn't even get all of our districts whole. There are still districts that will be looking at reductions and dipping into reserves at $8.4 billion. So that's the top priority. But that being said, the idea of creating a school innovation fund or and we've had a school improvement fund in the past, which is a little bit different concept. But the idea of having a school innovation fund where there's guaranteed money, where school districts have a wide menu of choices to make investments that work for their local districts is something that our organization is interested in discussing if we can get to 8.4 or above. I think the other reality is that what I see now with about 10 years, different stops, ODE, OSBA, and now COSA, what I've noticed particularly in the last few years is that as funding has not kept up with the demands of our school districts, what is happening is more and more stakeholders that care about the education system are going to try to sort of protect their little piece of the pie or get an investment. And I've already lost track in this committee and in the House Education Committee, the number of people that have come forward with great ideas, great programs, $1 million here, $3 million there, $4 million, you know, vision screening, all, you know, CTEP, all the things we hear about all the time. And the primary reason that those things are not happening in our school districts is because we haven't achieved the quality education model. We haven't funded our schools adequately. We're basically, since Measure 5, we've flat funded, and this is in the QEM report, since Measure 5, we've adjusted for inflation, we've basically flat funded schools on a per student basis. And we are 49th in the nation in investing in per pupil expenditures. And so that's why you get the kinds of outcomes and the frustration. And that's why, you know, you see things, people going to the ballot with things like Measure 98 and Measure 99, because they're frustrated that the legislature hasn't been able to make investments in CTE or outdoor school. And so I'm very concerned that we spend a lot of time talking about breaking down silos and having a seamless P-20 system and focusing on the policy, while at the same time the practical impacts of underfunding the K-12 system and the entire education system is that I would argue the money is more siloed than it has ever been. There's more competitive grants. There's more competition. There's more people here at the legislature asking for little pieces of funding for very worthy programs. And those are competing with everything else within the continuum of things that we do in K-12. So I think it's appropriate to have a conversation about an innovation fund, a school improvement fund, an investment fund, if we can get beyond the current service level, making that broad enough so districts have options and can do that at the local level. And that's just kind of the 2 cents from COSA on this issue. Thank you.
Thank you.
I'm not Mark Thielman, in case you didn't figure that out. My name is Terry Brandon. I'm the superintendent at Riverdale School District. Senator Roblin, members of the committee, I really am in support of this. I've been looking at it. I was part of the group originally, at least this year, part of the group that looked at ways to do this. And what I like about it is this is my 45th year in education, and this is my 13th year as a superintendent. Most of my time was spent in Washington, but Washington has never done anything like this. They've always put so many strings upon the funding that they have, and you end up not being able to do anything with it. What I like about this is it allows each district to look individually as to what's going to make the difference within their district. Superintendents of the state know what needs to be done to improve graduation rates, to improve student achievement. They know what to do, but they're so hamstrung with the lack of funding that they're just not able to carry things through. So I like this because we can take it and we can focus on those things that need to happen in our district. For example, one of the things in Riverdale that we have not done a good job of is CTE. We have a great pent-up need for that and a desire for that. So this would enable us to really approach that problem systemically and look at CTE across the district. And I really support that. So hopefully you can take a look at this and move it forward. Thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any questions for these gentlemen? Yes.
More comment, because Morgan brought up something that's relevant. I think it would be worth exploring to see if there is a nexus, you know, between this and the school improvement fund and which directions we are going, so we're not going crossways with each other. Okay.
Okay. Thank you. Anyone else who would like to testify here? If I can ask Jan McComb to come up, I I have a few. I'm hoping that you can share some insight into the idea of the weighted average daily versus total attendance and whatnot, because that will play out in this funding stream as well.
So you're asking her to explain the formula?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, for the record, Jan McCullen, the legislative director for the Department of Education, and with me is Brian Reeder. My chief duty here is just to keep an eye on Brian. He works with the formula all the time, and I was explaining to him that this committee doesn't really hear about the formula all that much. It's usually revenue. So I'll let Brian explain the difference between the weighted and unweighted number, because he'll probably do it much better.
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, Brian Reeder, Assistant Superintendent in the Research Office at Department of Education. I'll start with basic difference between what we call ADMR and ADMW. ADMR is the average number of students enrolled in a school district during the year prior to any weights being granted to that district. ADMW is after those weights have been granted. Now, the weights are based, most of them are based on student characteristics, but there are a couple that are based on the circumstances of the district itself, and you'll see why that's important here in a moment. A full extra weight for special education students, half a weight for English language learners, a quarter of a weight for students in poverty, and a couple of other weights for category known as neglected and delinquent students, which is a definition used by the Department of Human Services for students they serve. So when you add those weights to the basic count of ADMR, it increases on average the number of let me describe it a little differently. ADMW is about 22% higher than ADMR on a statewide average. So we have about 700,000 weighted students in the state and 500 and something thousand ADMR. The reason that there's a one weight in particular that's related to school districts and their school sizes. It's called the small school correction. And it gives additional weights to school districts that have small schools. When a district is very small, and I'll give an example here, the 00 school district in the 15-16 school year had three students, but it had almost 25 weighted students because it got a lot of additional weights from this small school correction. The logic there is that there are certain fixed costs that school districts have that cause very small districts to require much higher funding per student, per actual student, simply to maintain a building and heat a building and have a principal in their school and so forth. So there are clear economies of scale in running schools, and so these very small districts and schools are much more expensive to run on a per-student basis, so they're given these extra weights through the small school correction.
If I could, I mean, you go from 3 to 25, that is all because of size, or was that the other weights thrown in as well? Because there's weights for transportation and...
Chair Roblin, Senator Cruz, that's all the extra weights, okay. But okay. The bulk of those...
Bulk of it would be for the size, yeah.
For size, yes.
Yeah. Okay.
So does that answer your basic question about...
It may not help the other esteemed members of this panel, but it helps me, and the public watching certainly will be better informed for the information. So thank you for sharing that.
Question. And one of the things that I like to point out every time we have this conversation is that the weights were developed through a political process, figuring out where it was going. And there are a number of people who believe that because somebody gets a two weight, that all that money should be spent on that particular student. when in fact it was designed as a distribution formula that said, here's what you get as a school, now go forth and spend it, understanding your own particular needs in your district. Is that correct?
Chair Roblin, members of the committee, that is correct. And I would go a little bit further even, say that, you know, I think special education is a good example. Independent of the disability that a particular student may have, they get a full extra weight. Now, that extra roughly $7,500 for some special ed students is more than is required to serve their particular needs. For other students, it's much less. So we're sort of counting on the law of averages here to say that if we give every student on an IEP a full extra weight, that some will require less than that, some will require more, but on average, that'll get us about to where we need to be. And combine that with the fact that we don't require that money to be spent in any particular way. The logic is that it'll allow districts to serve all of their students on IEPs as well as they can, given their local circumstances.
There's actually more blending than that, because a lot of those services in rural parts of the state are contracted through ESDs, and some of the big districts in those ESDs help supplement the small districts as well. So there's a lot of blending goes on there.
Chair Roblin, Senator Cruz, that's exactly right. For a number of ESDs in the state, providing special ed services is the biggest thing they do.
Another question.
Thank you. And I was surprised, I really surprised, when we had the bill that another one that Canopa and I had talked about, which was changing the percentage of kids that we give for special ed. So right now there's a cap of 11%. We talked about 13%. That 2% changed the weight so that everybody got affected, and a lot of them in negative ways, because it added so many more weights to the whole system. And it surprised me that 2% growth in special needs kids across the state was going to cause that big an issue. So when we manipulate any of those, they create really big opportunities for winners and losers. But
yeah, Chair Roblin, the way I think about the formula is that what it does is it takes a big pot of money, both the state and local resources, and distributes it out to the school districts based on how many, basically, how many weighted students they have, with a couple of exceptions like the transportation grant and so forth. So if you change any of the weights, or you change how you count students who receive a weight, unless every district changes by the same percentage, you're going to distribute more money to some districts, and since the pot of money is fixed, that means distributing less money to some other districts. And that's one of the most important things to remember about our formula is, if you change weights and don't add money, there are going to be some winners and there's going to be some losers.
It's a zero-sum game. Senator Hess.
Thanks. And on that school district that you mentioned, 00, so 25 weights, what does that come out to in dollar amount that the state sends to that school district, roughly?
Well, I don't have that in front of me. Each weight this year, I think, is worth $7,500. Now, that's both state and local money, so I don't know how much local money they have. But let's assume that they have $2,000 per weighted student in local money, then the state would give them $5,500 per weighted student.
$187,000. Is that per year?
For three students.
Yes.
For three students.
Yeah.
And I think the year before that it was Paisley with two and others with I'm not saying anything here about small schools or rural Oregon, but when I tell people that we are spending that much in these tiny districts, they think I'm making it up.
Yes.
And so $200,000 for this district, I'm not saying these families should move or anything, but for that amount of money, we could put them up in the Heathman Hotel in Portland and send them to Catlin Gable. It just seems like it's just out of whack. And it is the function of the formula, and I'm not picking on you guys, you didn't create it, but the other thing to remember with small schools is for every dollar that goes to that school district is a dollar less for the Rosebrook School District, because it is a zero-sum game.
Right. The double O had three students in 2015-16, two students in 2014-15, and their weighted average, or the ADMW, the weighted version, is 24.4. So it's a classic example of where the weight makes a big difference.
Yep. And it's a place where...
Yes.
And it's a place where we can have real discussions about, is there a better way to provide that education to those students than the method we're currently using. So we've got better and better, including the state, who's developed its own online school. We've got better and better places where education could be provided in a different way to those schools at a much cheaper cost. So it's a real conversation that needs to take place.
Right.
Yes.
And Chair Roblin, members of the committee, when you run out of bills in May, if you'd like, we could come back and talk more about the state school fund and do a presentation.
I think that would be very,
I think it's
absolutely
a good question. So
go ahead.
Thank you. So where, when we do the formula, where has that been done at? Is that a revenue committee thing?
Yes.
Yeah, okay, I was just checking to make sure.
Mr. Chair, it's a grim, you try to change something, you want to do the best thing and help. A few years ago it was students with mental health issues, and you want to change and wait it for them, but you do that and everybody else loses, and
it's
very, very hard to change the formula. Very, very hard.
Yeah. It's complicated, and anything you touch ripples. Mm-hmm.
And it was hard to get to an agreement in the first place. That took more than a day.
Very good. Any other questions? Thank you.
One more person might want to talk.
Thank you. You're excused. Is there anyone else who wants to testify here? I don't see a name.
You called him up earlier.
Yeah. Oh,
chose not to.
This is Mark.
Yeah. Chair Roblin, thank you guys for letting me. I was double booked.
He's chair.
Oh, you're the chair.
Yes.
Okay, nice to meet you. I'm Mark Thielman, ALSEI superintendent. I came in and I missed some of the testimony, but when you're talking about zero-sum game and win-lose, there's another way to look at it. I think it would be good to have it on the record, whether it's special ed or any other kind of weight.
Okay.
So, and correct me if I'm wrong, but when we're talking about weights and winners and losers, there's winners and losers right now. If we do nothing to the formula, there's winners and losers.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, who needs to win most, and how do we want to, what decisions do we make in order to help that? And I think when we say it that way, it's very different, because whether it's the SPED bill or this bill in terms of adding $300 million, and carving up some things and being flexible and having innovations, it creates winners and losers, but the winners can be big. So right now on the SPED one, you brought it up, Saul, I just want to have this for erudition. Oftentimes in districts that don't have bonds and don't have a lot of local sources of revenue, whether it's a local option levy, et cetera, or they're not as well-to-do, or they have a higher poverty ratio, they tend to have higher special ed, and they also have much higher need for intervention and innovation. They're less able. And I'll give two district examples, which is why this 803 is a good bill. And there's Lebanon School District and Corvallis, and they're less, about 20 miles apart. And it's night and day different in terms of what the two districts are able to provide and what the different demographics in the community are. One is higher, much higher poverty, much higher ELL, much higher minority, much more disadvantaged issues than the other. And that's not a judgment on either community. It's just a fact of reality. It's a reality of each district. So whether if you're in a district like Lebanon and you don't have a whole lot of innovation funding, you don't have a local option levy that you get to put in on top of, what happens is you have to take that, you still have to serve those kids because those needs don't go away. And generally the kids that lose are the general fund kids. And that's a fact. And it happens in your district, Senator Roblin, and so on and so forth. So I just want to introduce that in terms of why it's important. Intervention, innovation, supports for the disadvantaged, equity, it all costs money. And what I like about this bill is it allows local people who have the best concept of what their needs are to have real direct, efficient access to money that they can specifically apply to real problems. And the end flow is better supports for general fund kids. And so remember, it's an equity distribution formula. We get to pick who do we want to win most, because right now there's winners and losers. So that's my two bits. I hope I wasn't too redundant.
Good. So. No, thank you.
Okay.
Any questions? No okay. Questions? Super. Thank you.
Thank you.
You can close the hearing.
I will now close the hearing for Senate Bill 803.
Thank you.
We can reopen that, can't we? So with that, we would like to reopen, because there's somebody that would love to testify. I'll reopen Senate SJR 20. Is that the one that you want, sir? 20 or 18? 20. And we'll call up Senator Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I apologize for not being here earlier. We were in a very interesting debate on the next room over for veterans, which I am very passionate about. For the record, my name is Alan Olson. I represent Senate District 20, which is the heart of Clackamas County, and I'm here today in support of SGR 20. When I was first fortunate enough to be able to run for the Senate in 2010, I used the three E's: employment, education, and efficient government. I've been here for 6 years now, and I smile when I mention efficient government. Is there a possibility to get there? I really believe there is, but we're not there yet. But what really is very important to me is education. Because as a state, to survive, we need to have an educated workforce so that employers will look to the state and say, I can move there, I can hire people and put them to work without further training. Education is critical to our success and our survival. And SGR 20 basically says that we as legislators need to take a look at education and fund it and do it quickly. Because the schools are out there waiting for our guidance as to how much we can give them. The problem is they need to start negotiating their contracts now, and we are still looking at the school budget. If we were able to fund the school budgets within 65 days, schools would have certainty as to what they could get, at least what they could use, and perhaps in the future, as we look at our budget, we could put more money into them. But right now, they can't do that. When I first got here in 2011, when we had a 30-30 split in the House, and Mr. Chair, you would recognize that you were the co-chair there, we were fortunate because we funded schools quickly. And it was one of the things that we demanded we do, that we fund schools quickly. And the last biennium, we were very late in doing it. And this biennium, we're into the end of March. And I still haven't seen any real discussion as to the school numbers. And it concerns me. I actually have a bill that puts a substantial amount of money into the schools. And why did I do it? Because I knew we couldn't get there. But I did it hoping that it would open up the door so people would start discussing the education budget. It's very difficult when we look at our budgets and we remember our last biennium on how successful we were. Everybody went around talking about the great state of our state. And shortly, when we get into our next biennium, we have this huge deficit we need to deal with. That bothers me. And one of the reasons it bothers me is the fact that employers don't look to our state. They don't look to our state because they look at our educational level. And they look at the difficulty we have funding education. And I think it's a travesty, and I think it's incumbent upon we as legislators to change that. And that's why SGR 20 is so important. And if we put it out to people, I believe they would vote for it and say, yes, if you can't fund schools within 65 days, you shouldn't get paid. And everyone should understand the fact that we don't get paid a lot, so that we're not really taking a lot out of our pockets. But the fact of the matter is that it's our job to do this early so that the schools can have that certainty of what they need to spend and what they can spend. Now, the question, next question that would arise is, do they spend it wisely? That's a whole new discussion, because I'd like to see if we funded them quickly that our educational levels, our graduation rates, would climb precipitously. And I hope they could do that. And I hope they could do that with the confidence that we, the legislative body, will always be behind them to fund them at a level that's necessary. So, Mr. Chair, Vice Chair, members of the committee, I would hope that you would take a good look at this bill and move it forward, and let's let the people decide what we, the legislative body, should do. Thank you, and I'll take any questions.
So, any other? So, my thinking here is that, what's the number on this bill?
SGR 20.
What's your Senate district's number?
20.
Oh, I was just wondering if that was the
an irony.
Part of the impetus, part of the impetus of the bill, so I was just checking to see.
No.
Okay, right, just kidding. that's right.
That's a little private joke between the senator and I.
So, thank you for your testimony, and I don't really have any questions. I think that it's something we will consider as we move forward and try to decide. And I again have said there have been a number of times when I've been here, including the time when I was co-speaker when we got to this done early. We actually added money back in each case that we did it early. I worry that we get in the habit of doing it early and we don't fund it as much as I hope we could, and therefore we're taking a vote on a budget that I would hope we don't end with. That's always an issue for me, because we haven't been in this building, we haven't really ever funded it at QEM levels or where I think most people would like to be. So finding that money is always tough. So, but thank you.
Well, I thank you for the opportunity to come back, and I thank you for opening up the hearing so that I can put my testimony in. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is there anybody else now that would like to speak to it since it's open? There's not a rush, just as there was not a rush the time before. Okay.
Before we leave, because you mentioned QEM, which was created a long time ago, and it's kind of fantasy island. I wish we could get to a more realistic number that we could target.
I will say that QEM, they change how they go about it every year. They have real conversations. I think there's some really good information that we don't always look at when we're having the conversations about QEM, because it isn't like it's a static.
No, I understand the process.
And the truth is, I think there's an awful lot of good research behind it. If we really want to get to the levels we're saying, we need to look at it really carefully and look at the other information they give us every time they do it.
I understand, Mr. Chair, but it's also the fact that we will probably never get there, and so we're deemed a failure because we don't. And I would suggest that we do the best we can and aren't necessarily a failure. We're just dealing with the reality of situations.
I can agree with that, but I also think that we should be able, and schools should be able to say, we're working really hard to do what we're doing.
Mm-hmm.
We know what it takes to get where you want us to be, and we're never funded there. They never get credit for all of the efforts and time and stuff that they put in, making do with what they are given, when they and everybody else knows if we really want to get there. And if we got to full QEM, as a proportion of the state money per kid, we still would not be at the top of what some other states are doing. So you have to look at all of it, and I think keeping that in perspective is always helpful. Mm-hmm. I never think of myself as a failure for not getting there, but I think of that as that aspirational goal, that if we don't hold it in front of us and we don't have people putting their time in to explain to how it has changed over time and what kinds of things may be more important, which they do every time, it would be bad if we didn't get some of that guidance from very thoughtful people who are on the commission.
Mr. Chairman, I fully understand that, and I appreciate the work. It's just we're...
I know.
Okay. Yep. Perception is... Okay.
Okay. With that, we will close our public hearing on SJR 20 for the second time. I think that takes care of all the business we have today. So is there any other things that come up? I want to thank Senator Lithicum for carrying the... conversation and being the chair for a little while, because it was helpful to not have to worry about that. It is difficult when you're used to it, though, to not, when you come back here, not intercede. So thanks for calling on me when I raised my hand.
He could have adjourned.
Could have ignored me and adjourned, yeah. With that, we will adjourn the Senate Education Committee today, the 21st of March.